Is there anything that doctors today can do to increase their time with patients? Is there anything that you would suggest, like, helping that problem?
Oh, boy. Well, one is to have, another person, the trainee, as I just said, spending the time, and then getting sort of a secondary system of getting the information from the trainee and the patient at the same time. So that's something which the academic center has over the person in practice alone who isn't doing this. The other has to do with the economy of medicine, which is beyond our control. I mean, we get into the politics of medicine, of which I do not consider myself competent to speak. The efforts to reform the healthcare system, the fact that there's not enough money, the fact that technology is incredibly expensive, the fact that medical expenses are going up far faster than the rate of inflation. I don't see a simple answer to this. And all the other thing that's happening is that the primary care physician, the person who would be designated as a general internist or a pediatrician or a family physician, those are three different tracks, or the obstetrician gynecologist, those would be the four types of primary physicians. Nobody's going into those anymore. I shouldn't say nobody, but very few trainees are opting to go into there. They all want to go into some kind of subspecialty. So we are faced with a upcoming drastic change in medicine where there may not be a physician who sees you. It may be a one of those extenders, the nurse practitioner or the physician's assistant, who becomes the quasi-doctor, if you will. And that's not all bad. But there's going to be some profound changes there, which are just sort of beginning to assert themselves. So.
Interesting. How did you feel about retiring? Were you excited to retire? Or how did that happen?
I retired at age 65. And you do get burned out. And I was getting burned out as a gastroenterologist. I had to get up at night a lot. And it becomes harder and harder to get up at night and function at 3 o'clock in the morning to do a complicated procedure, we'll say, when you're 62 than it was when you were 42. It becomes harder and harder to do that. And I was working hard. I was not a slacker. I worked hard all the time. I spent long days. I wasn't just having an 8-hour day. Mm-hmm. So this began to wear me down. In the last couple of years, I pretty much got out of practice altogether. I kept some of the, quote, most difficult patients, unquote, that I talked about earlier, and right essentially to the end of the time. But I was ready to retire at age 65. I had developed a number of hobbies along the way, which I was later to expand on. I mean, the natural world, birding, I developed an interest in photography. I've been sort of a do-it-yourselfer, home-maintenance person. I got involved in a lot of other stuff. I wouldn't say I wasn't a jack-of-all-trades, but I was interested in a lot of stuff besides medicine. And so that was the starting point when I retired, just to expand on all those things. I've become a, quote, professional volunteer, unquote.
Could you tell me about some of the different organizations that you are a professional volunteer for today?
Right. Well, I can tell you what I'm doing right now. I've been, for about 15 years, I've been on the board of directors of the Delaware Otsego Audubon Society, a wonderful group of people. I was the president for a few years. These are really committed folks who are concerned with trying to save the environment from all the onslaughts that are occurring on it. They're focused on birds, but they're focused on many other things. So this is a board where virtually everyone shows up at the meetings, you know, and everyone is committed to do something. So that's been a wonderful experience. These are just wonderful middle-class people who, they're all educated folks, but they're not the higher echelons of society, if you will. They're just wonderful folks. So I've really enjoyed that over the years. I've been a member of a couple of other organizations. I was on the board of directors of the Otsego County Conservation Association for a number of years, and I'm not on their board anymore. I'm certainly a staunch member of their organization. I was a member of the board of Otsego 2000, another environmental organization. I'm on a number of committees now. I'm on a committee called the Brookwood Committee of the Otsego Land Trust, which is trying to decide the fate of a 21-acre area called Brookwood on Lake Otsego, and that's a very busy, energizing committee. So I've kept myself involved with this kind of organization over the years, and I have a lot of meetings.
You find it very rewarding, though?
Oh, very rewarding. I mean, the kind of people who get involved in these organizations are just wonderful people. You know, you're sort of with kindred souls. You're all trying to do something. You're not doing it for the money. You're doing it to try to be helpful, to try to change things for the better. Mm-hmm. And you've just got great people to have to interact with. So
you've been interested in the environment since your entire life, really. How has Cooperstown, since when you first moved here till today, how has the environment changed of Cooperstown, you know, in your eyes?
Not much. Well, the village has changed because the village, because of baseball, the tourism has, baseball tourism has become a dominating factor in the village of Cooperstown. People complain about that they, you know, the shops are all baseball shops, but you go to other villages in upstate New York and the shops are boarded up. I mean, Cooperstown has remained a vibrant community, even though in the winter it almost shuts down. And if you bring an intern applicant into Cooperstown in November and they ask, what am I going to do outside Bassett Hospital, they walk down Main Street. There's not much going on there. It's like the hospital has kept its values and its ambience, and it's a small community. It's only 2,500 people, and it's there are some wonderful people in the village, not just those connected with Bassett. So I would say it's remained very much the same, with the exception of this baseball influence. The New York State Historical Association, what a wonderful institution that has some people aren't even aware of, but it's just a remarkable part of the community. The development of the Glimmerglass Opera. I mean, these things have changed tourism away from just baseball over the past few years. And then, of course, Cooperstown is the county seat. Bassett is the largest employer in Otsego County, bringing all sorts of professional people in. The schools in Cooperstown are good. You've got all these great teachers and their families. So it's a very interesting community, a sort of interlocking, a Venn diagram of various interlocking communities here.
So things have changed for the most part for the better.
I think, I've never been a complainer. I think that they've changed. It had to change in the difficult economic climate that New York State finds itself in. Cooperstown is an island of excellence and beauty. I mean, it goes back to the traditions to the fact that William Cooper came here, the lake. I mean, the ambience of Cooperstown, all the history there, Cooper, the Clark family, all those things that I didn't mention a minute ago that have kept this place in a very pristine state. Then there's Oneonta, which has two colleges, and with a lot of very superb members of the faculty down there. I've been on some committees involved with Oneonta as well, and you put those two communities together and you have a wonderful place in upstate New York to live and do what you have to do.
So it's been all these different facets of the community life that has kept you in Cooperstown, you think, that it has enriched your
life? Yes, and it's going to keep me there. I mean, I'm living alone now on this 200-acre place with this big house, and I'm with my dog, fortunately. And I'm hoping to continue on as long as I can here. You know, at 80, you don't know what's going to happen. I have no plans to leave. I'm not a part timer. I don't go south for the winter or something like that. I enjoy the winters here.
So one of the things we talked about earlier is teaching medicine, but also these days you're teaching workshops on history and nature. Can you tell me a little bit about the differences between teaching students of medicine versus teaching a humanities topic? You know, how is those two different audiences? But
well, I'm not really teaching workshops. I mean, I give talks.
Okay.
I give a lot of talks related to birds, for the most part, and related to the history of Bassett Hospital. So this is a sort of informal continuing continuing education, if you will. But I wouldn't really call it workshops. I was involved in workshops, medical education workshops, on a national level to some extent when I was at Bassett.
Okay.
But that's not what I'm doing now.
No, you're right? Just giving talks.
Yeah.
All right.
Which I enjoy.
That's good. So who is your audience for those talks, roughly?
Well, a number of audiences. Starting with the Center for Continuing Adult Learning in Oneonta, which is, you have to become a member. Most of the members are senior people like myself, and they have about 40 or 50 courses per year given by various people. I've become one of the people who not only attends other courses but who gives courses. So I've given courses on birding. In fact, I'm just preparing one right now to be given next week for the Center for Continuing Adult Learning in Oneonta. I've given courses in birding and on Bassett's history. I've given 30 or 40 talks on Bassett's history to this region, to all sorts of groups.
Very impressive.
The Native Sons of Cooperstown, or the Fly Creek Historical Society, or Grand Rounds at Bassett Hospital, or whatever. The Friends of Bassett, these sorts of things. So I'm constantly, it's a lot of fun. Now that we have all the technology using a PowerPoint approach to giving these talks, it's really a lot of fun to put these things together.
That's pretty exciting. So you're not really retired, you're more of...
I don't sit around.
No.
I don't sit in a rocking chair. I don't look at TV more than maybe 15 minutes of news a day. I read as much as I can. I'm active as much as I can. I'm around. I move at fairly high speed.
So, to kind of wrap it up, I'm interested in what would you consider your proudest accomplishment in life? I know that's kind of a big question, but
boy.
I was thinking. So far.
Well, let's put it two. I was fortunate just to marry a wonderful woman. And the challenge of raising a family, and we just did so many things together. We traveled all over the place. We climbed mountains. We canoed. We kept our household going. We did all sorts of things together. And I guess just the achievement of having a family, a wonderful family. I guess I'd put that number one. Number two would be at Bassett. I felt I was able to do what I wanted to do in medicine. I thought I was being a service to countless numbers of patients, and as a teacher to help trainees get the gist of things, and hoping that they would go on to feel like I did, that I really wanted to do something useful in medicine. So I guess those two things are what come off the top of my head here.
Well, thank you very much for your time. We Cooperstown Graduate Program appreciate your time for this oral history project. So we just wanted to say thank you.
Thanks a lot. I really enjoyed it. Thanks very much, Rebecca.
Thanks.